Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
It's really therapeutic in a way, you know, because it's living things and you're a part of it and you keep it going.
That's Lee Bush. She's lovingly referring to her vermicomposting bin full of red wiggler worms. Along with two composting experts, we answer your questions about how to do it right. After that, we're celebrating National Bike Month with Bloomington, Indiana's two-wheeled recycling operation Pedal Power. It's also American Craft Beer Week, so the folks of Traditional Arts Indiana go inside the world of home brewing. And finally, two recipes. One uses strawberries, and the other is a great excuse to break out the grill. There's a lot happening today on Earth Eats. Mia Partlow reads the food news headlines from the week. Hey there.
Hi, Annie. Denny's is the latest chain to announce its plans to stop the use of gestation crates for its pork products. Denny's follows in the footsteps of McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's, among others. On the flip side, Domino's Pizza shareholders voted to reject the Humane Society's request to stop buying pork produced with crates. In a letter published on the blog Just Farmers, fifth-generation hog farmer Chris Chin wrote a thank-you note to Domino's, calling it a common-sense decision. Her family uses the crates to protect sows from other hogs and to monitor their feed and health. Chin says, quote, "Domino's Trust shows me that the pizza company does not want to force regulations on farmers that may not achieve their desired outcome," unquote. And this just in, food affects how your brain functions. This may seem like a statement of the obvious, but a new UCLA study is the first to show how a diet high in high fructose corn syrup slows the brain, hampering memory and learning. Still not interested in giving up your twice daily soda habit? No worries. The study also found that adding omega-3 fatty acids to your diet can minimize the damage done by fructose. And the state of Massachusetts is embroiled in cupcake wars. Last week, the public health department came up with a proposal to ban bake sales in public schools 30 minutes before, during, and after classes. Critics were furious, saying the ban would do nothing to prevent childhood obesity and would instead undermine the fundraising efforts of parent and student groups. So Governor Deval Patrick ordered an about-face on the ban, saying, quote, "Nobody's interested in banning bake sales. What we are interested in is student nutrition and delivering good choices," unquote. Read more about these stories and many more on our website, eartheats.org.
And visit our Twitter site and Facebook page for more foodie news throughout the week. Add your thoughts to the conversation. Search for Earth Eats. Thanks, Mia.
No problem.
Composting is the process of mixing yard and household organic waste into a pile so that the bacteria and fungi can encourage it to decompose. It's not only a way of reducing the amount of waste that goes into landfills and to recycling centers, it's a way to produce your own organic fertilizer and soil amendment. We send out a call to our Twitter followers and Facebook friends to find out what questions they had about composting but never knew who to ask. Two master composters came into the studio to give us some answers.
My name is Michael Simmons. I'm program specialist for the City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department.
I am Stephen Hale, and I am a student in Michael Simmons' master composter class.
Mm-hmm. So I want to start off with things that maybe you didn't know you could compost that you can. Toothpicks, wine corks, nail clippings, hair trimmings. You can do all sorts of paper. You can do old bills. You can do paper towels, newspapers. What else can you compost that people might not think of?
Well, there's really a wide variety of things. Of course, the obvious things that people compost are dried leaves and grass clippings and weeds, plus kitchen scraps that they take out. But there's almost anything organic will break down eventually. The trick is to get the carbon to nitrogen ratio correct so that it will break down in a reasonable period of time.
How do you do that?
Well, you aim for a carbon to nitrogen ratio of about 30 to 1 or 25 to 1 carbon to nitrogen.
As someone who just composts in my backyard just as a way to reduce the waste that I produce, how do I know if I'm building a properly balanced compost?
Well, it's kind of like cooking. It's some people use a very careful adherence to a recipe, and others do it more by intuition. But the idea is to try to balance the – when we're teaching children, we say the browns and the greens, the browns being the carbon sources and the greens being the nitrogen sources, in such a way as to reach that ideal ratio. So by kind of visually layering these materials, you can get a pretty good sense of how much of each you have. There are, of course, indicators when you have too much nitrogen or too much carbon. If you have too much carbon, nothing happens. And if you have too much nitrogen, you start to smell ammonia coming off the pile, and you know you're losing nitrogen at that point. So you need to address that balance.
And
so,
I will say that was part of my learning experience, you know, things I didn't know about before I took the class and things that you would want to compost. And it was all about newspapers, because we always just took our newspaper to the recycling. And now, since our compost bin is mostly food scraps, like Michael says, that can be a problem because they're too nitrogen rich. So by blending in some moisture and some newspaper with that, it's totally changed the way our compost pile is working. It's a nice warm pile now where it wasn't before, and just see a lot more black stuff producing. Just in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, you can start to see a difference. And again, it's things we were recycling anyway, but now we're recycling them in our own backyard to make a soil amendment instead of taking them to the city recycling.
The number one topic of question we got was the smell. So people are concerned about composting outside because it could potentially attract critters. And then people who are composting inside, they don't want the smell in the kitchen if they're using redworms. So let's address the smell issue.
Generally speaking, the bad smells come from compost when something has gone wrong. Either the pile is starved for oxygen and parts of it have become anaerobic, and of course the anaerobic bacteria have produced odors by creating methane, alcohol, sulfides that are very obnoxious. And so one thing is to keep the heap aerated, to be sure that it's not getting too wet and developing anaerobic pockets. But if the composting process is going well, it won't have a noticeable odor. Certainly, not one that would be objectionable to neighbors.
And let me just add, our backyard compost bin is proof of the accuracy of Michael's recommendations. We had to do a project with a composting class, and I used our backyard bin as our compost project. We were doing very few of the things right. We were just throwing in pure food scraps, nothing to balance the carbon. We weren't stirring it, mixing it, or doing anything to help it out otherwise. So it had over a year's worth of stuff in it. And I did sort of a compost bin autopsy to see what digested, what didn't digest. And this thing about anaerobic, we had an anaerobic basketball-sized lump of material that was just matted together, very wet, no air circulating through it. And I think they could smell it in Martinsville when I opened it up. It was pretty grim. But since then, as I was saying, by getting the right mixture of ingredients, by stirring regularly, watching the moisture a little bit, there is no smell.
Well, and we have another question here from L.A. Alicia, who's wondering about the smell indoors when she's using redworms. Again, is the smell just a non-issue if you're doing it correctly?
That's right. It's important that you put in the right amount of food. Often smell comes when people overfeed the worms. When a box is initially started, it will take a while for them to acclimate to their new living arrangements and to begin to digest the food. And it has the amount of food given to them has to correlate with the amount of worms in the box. So as they reproduce, they will be able to handle larger and larger quantities, but it's important to kind of watch and be sure that the food is being eaten as it's being introduced. And if it starts to smell, you should stop feeding for a week or two to allow them to catch up.
We have a question from a Twitter follower named Lentils and Rice, and this is relevant to a lot of folks in college towns. Any tips for renters who move every year?
Well, there is one thought, again, something we learned about in class, and it's the vermicomposting. That's where you use these red wriggler worms, which can fit into a wooden box. One of the ladies in our class actually had a really cool thing where she has these big cake containers like you get from some of these big stores where you buy a whole birthday cake and it's in this big plastic thing. Well, she takes the clear lids of those and she has the worms in there with some newspaper and then just putting in the food scraps. And then she uses the bottom of the cake keeper as the lid, keep it all covered up. And it could fit, you know, in the sink cabinet, you know, under your kitchen sink, something like that.
Well, guys, this has been so fantastic. Thanks for coming in.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Composting is not limited to homeowners with backyards. Apartment dwellers and renters can compost indoors, on a porch, or in a garage with red worms. Lee Bush picked up a bunch of red worms from a friend and started a vermicomposting bin on her front porch.
So, here we have the worm box. This is,
She repurposed an old wooden ammo box she picked up from the local Army-Navy surplus store.
And it's perfect because it's ventilated and it's wood and it's really the perfect thing to use. And I don't really like using the plastic ones because the worms are really happy in here and it allows for some ventilation and it's got this hinge top to it and everything about it makes it easy to have your red wigglers be happy inside.
Can I take a look?
Yeah. So on top we've got a pile of moistened newspaper. I think what you look for is a loamy type texture. So you want things to be light inside. So you put newspaper on the bottom and then you put your compost materials on top of that. And then you put newspaper on top and that gives them what they want. So we go up here and you part your newspaper.
Look at all of those worms.
Yeah, you start with a handful, and if you feed them well and regularly, they are really, really happy. And my worms seem to be doing pretty well right now. And what you end up doing is, as they turn all this stuff into compost, you can move it over to the side, and they'll go over to where the ingredients are fresher, things that they want to eat more, and then slowly you can scrape off the top, and they'll burrow into the bottom because they don't want to see all that light, and you can start putting it on your garden.
Aren't they beautiful?
Yes.
Wow.
They're so beautiful. I love them. Would you like to touch one? It's really therapeutic in a way, you know, because it's living things and you're a part of it and you keep it going.
You can see photos of Lee Bush's worm box on our website, where you can find plenty of other suggestions for how to compost under your sink in your backyard, with worms, without worms. Perhaps the most innovative idea combines composting with growing. Check out photos and get inspired to make your own at eartheats.org. We're using some local strawberries in this first recipe. An old favorite also makes an appearance. Chef Daniel Orr's legendary buttermilk biscuits.
You know, you can use it for so many things. We've used it for biscuit biscotti. We've used it, you know, served with goat cheese, make them with Parmesan. You could throw some wild garlic chives in the biscuit mix. And, you know, there are lots of ways to use it. But today we're going to make it into a dessert to celebrate spring strawberries. So I've got a nice dish of strawberries, probably about 3 to 4 cups of strawberries. I'm going to put a little bit of local maple syrup. This comes from Burton's Maple Camp. Probably about 1/2 to 3/4 cup of maple syrup.
What grade maple syrup are you using?
Well, this I like to use the grade B. Grade B is, I think, a little gutsier. Grade A is for pancakes, you know, where you're really going to taste the maple syrup without a lot of other confusing elements. But when you start adding other things like, you know, the sweet acidity of strawberries, it would distract from grade A syrup. So use grade B for those things. I'm going to add about 1/2 lemon's worth of juice. Now, again, with desserts, a lot of times I'll add a pinch of salt and just a little pinch of freshly ground black pepper.
Salt and pepper in strawberries and maple syrup, that seems a little incongruous.
Well, if you like pancakes with maple syrup and bacon, it's kind of the same thing. You got that sweet, salty thing is something we like. The French in Brittany, they do a caramel that they coat with sea salt. So,
but the pepper in there as well?
The pepper, too. There's a famous dish in Italy that's strawberries with balsamic vinegar and cracked black pepper.
For a little something different, we're adding some fresh mint to this dish.
These are really perfumey. You know, they've been waiting underground all winter long. They're going to the disco when they come out. And when it's this young, you can even throw some of the stems in. It doesn't matter. They're tender. It's only when, you know, mint gets older and gets woody that you really need to worry about the stems. Kind of sprinkle that over the strawberries. We're going to toss this. Now, you can let this macerate for 10 or 15 minutes, and it's only going to get better with a little bit of time.
You just used a $10 word there, macerate.
That's when you put fruit and sugar together, and it draws out the liquid. So, you know, anytime you cut up some fruit and you toss it with sugar, it'll turn into a syrup, and that's maceration.
But now, can you spell that?
No, you need to get one of those kids that can go to spelling bees to spell it. All right, so I've got these nice biscuits. They're warm from the oven. I'm going to just put a little bit of strawberries on because I want to top these with ice cream. And if I put the ice cream directly on the biscuit, it would melt too quickly. And then what I like to do is to take a little bit of yogurt, and that's going to cut down on the sweetness of the ice cream. And I just kind of drizzle that around the outside. And then decorate it with some more of those mint babies. Okay, and that's mint and maple strawberry shortcake.
See photos, watch a video, and print off the recipe on our website. It's basically everything but the taste at eartheats.org. Coming up...
Diversity is the name of the game. Staying creative and do whatever you can on a bike that's practical. You know, if you don't have to use a truck, don't.
That's Chad Roeder of Pedal Power. In honor of National Bike Month, he'll tell us what made him decide to give up on cars and start a two-wheeled recycling service. Stay with us.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. Bloomingfoods.coop.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. This week is American Craft Beer Week. To celebrate, Upland Brewing Company of Bloomington, Indiana is holding its annual Up Cup Home Brewing Competition. Contestants submit two bottles of their best beer. The winner gets to brew an entire batch with the brewers at Upland and have it sold at their locations in Bloomington and Indianapolis. According to the seasoned home brewer Dib Harding, this is not a hobby for the faint-hearted. Betsy Shepard of Traditional Arts Indiana talks to him and other homebrewers from around Indiana to find out more.
Though homebrewing is now seen as a specialized hobby, beer is one of the oldest cottage industries and has been an Indiana tradition since before statehood.
It's nothing new at all. You know, homebrewing in the New World, America, again goes back to the foundings of the country. And then, of course, with the advent of Prohibition, there was a heck of a boom in home brewing. Life without beer during Prohibition was absolutely unacceptable.
As Dibbs mentioned, home brewing flourished during Prohibition. Interest in craft brewing was renewed in the 80s due to similar conditions. This time, the market, rather than the government, restricted the availability of beer.
The biggest motivation was that there just wasn't any exciting beers available. The major brewers in the U.S. pretty much dominated the market.
Rick Steedham explains the appeal of home brewing, which allows individuals to customize beers to their own tastes.
I'll taste a commercial beer that I really, really like. Maybe there's one little part of it that I want to change. I want to make it a little bit hoppier or a little maltier or a little darker or lighter or something like that. You have the freedom to do that as a home brewer.
Before striking the perfect malt hop mix, brewers often have to suffer some pretty curious flavors.
Everyone knows skunk. Tastes like cardboard.
A lot of people describe it as leathery.
Vegetal.
Horse blanket.
Metallic.
Barnyard.
You know, that sour flavor. Everyone would know sour flavor.
It has some kind of like spruce or something in it.
It tasted like floor wax for me.
Rick says he's never been known to brew a bad beer. Here's his trade secret.
If I brew a beer that doesn't taste good and I don't really like it, nobody else gets any.
Chad Powell says that sharing beer is a crucial part of the learning process, which is why he got involved in the homebrewing social club, the Bloomington Hop Jockeys.
At our meetings, we basically do a little bit of club business, and then we basically sit around and sample each other's beer and talk about it. Our main focus, as our bylaws state, is education about beer and appreciation of the beer styles that are out there commercially, homebrew-wise, everything, and about learning about how to homebrew beer. I mean, that's really, we're more of a social education group. We want to have fun, sample beer, but we also want to teach people about beer and about homebrewing.
Hear more about the community aspects of homebrewing on the Traditional Arts Indiana website. They visit Floyd County, Indiana, and chat with members of the homebrewing club Fossils. Their podcast series exploring Indiana food traditions is called Second Servings. Find it at traditionalartsindiana.org/secondservings.
I've seen from the past rise before me, just watching the bubbles in the beer. A vision
of... Chad Roeder didn't intend to get into recycling when he started his bicycle delivery service, Pedal Power. But he saw how downtown Bloomington, Indiana businesses were struggling to find an efficient way to dispose of their recyclables. So this unique two-wheeled local business was born. He brings empty totes to the businesses, loads up their recyclables, and straps the totes to the trailer he pulls behind his hybrid bicycle.
Yeah, and you know, we also serve as a natural traffic calming device on the streets.
In the fall of 2011, Pedal Power was one of the recipients of the city's first sustainability partnership grants, which will help facilitate cardboard pickup, by far the most plentiful item Roeder picks up. Earth Eats stopped by the Farm Bloomington restaurant in 2009 as he was picking up their recyclables to find out how all this got started for him.
For many years, I was not really green or didn't really think a lot about it. During my 20s, and you know, I was concerned about myself. And I was actually in Manhattan on when September 11th happened, and I was working on a film and was in charge of the equipment truck. And so we had the wrap party, and I was coming back early in the morning on September 11th, and I parked the truck in a bonded lot there near Canal Street, and took the train down to World Trade Center. I was due to get up the next morning to take the equipment truck back to the equipment rental place, and I set the alarm for 8 o'clock, fell asleep, and woke up a few minutes later and said, you know what? No, I've been working my tail off on this production. I'm going to sleep in. And I was waking the next morning by my roommate saying, hey, Chad, somebody flew a plane into the World Trade Center. Like, oh, you know, if I had gone that morning when my alarm went off, that would have put me, you know, in the World Trade Center at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that was a wake-up call, okay? It really got me thinking about global versus local economy. I started thinking about biodiesel as a way to go, you know, to get away from the foreign fuel. So I had this big project. I found a Mercedes, an old 300D guy in Unionville was selling. It was kind of an old junky car, but I really wanted to try to convert it and to run it on grease or biodiesel or whatever. Coming home, I noticed that the brakes were a little mushy. I was about 3 or 4 blocks from my home, and at that point, the brakes decided to fail completely, just as I was coming down the hill. And it was rush hour traffic, zipping back and forth. And this is the funny part. Fortunately, I started to swing into a parking lot, brought the front wheel up over the curb, and the car came to a stop. I got out and said, you know what? Let's forget about it. Exactly. This is way too complicated.
Read more about Chad Roeder and Pedal Power on our website, eartheats.org. In preparation for Memorial Day next week, we're busting out the grill for the first time this year. We're adding a fun touch to this dish. The shrimp we're grilling up will be skewered on rosemary stems.
You know, if you've got rosemary plants at home and they get kind of these strong branches on them, you can use these as your brochettes or your skewers.
Great idea.
So rosemary does get almost like a pine tree, yeah. You know, so they are quite strong. I'm going to use some of these smaller ones. I'm going to leave a little bit on just to give it some flavor and a little bit of flair. All right. And we'll take a little bit of this rosemary, rough chop it. Keep it coarse. Some of that will fall through the grill and get smoky and kind of perfume and smoke the brochettes as they cook. We're going to add juice of half a lemon. And then we'll save the other half to squeeze over them after they come off the grill. Okay, we've got some chopped garlic. We've got some chili powder. And I put a little bit of smoked paprika in there, too.
Nice.
And that's going to help accent the smokiness of the grill. We're going to throw in about a teaspoon of lime zest. You could use lemon zest, too. A little bit of salt. And finally, just a touch of olive oil. You don't want your marinades that when you're going to be grilling items to be too oily, because that will send a lot of flares up, and your meat will taste like kerosene. So always go very light on the oil. Now we take these and skewer them onto the rosemary.
I feel like I should be helping you. Just staring at you do this.
I'm used to it by now.
All right, okay, well then keep going. You're doing great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so a nice sunny afternoon in southern Indiana. We've got our grill preheated, and we can do these over pretty high heat.
This is good. It won't take too long to cook, right? So we don't have to be over the hot grill for too long?
Absolutely. These are going to cook really quickly. And another great thing about using these skewers is that the shrimp will be easy to turn. Usually you'd have to turn all the individual pieces. This way, you can just turn them a bunch at a time. Got a little more of this marinade with all those nice chunky pieces of garlic. We can get those on top of there.
I have a lot of rosemary. I'm going to make this dish, but then I'm still going to have some left over. How else would you use rosemary in other dishes?
One of my secret seasonings is anytime I cook something, I'll throw like especially a pasta sauce or tomato sauce. I'll take the garlic with some extra virgin olive oil, let it get nutty brown, and then throw in a handful of rosemary leaves. Let those get a little bit crispy, and then throw your tomato sauce in, and it just gives this real rustic, homey Italian flavor to it. And you see how that rosemary is burning a little bit? That's adding this aroma, this perfume. I'll close this down just for a minute so that it gets a little more smoky flavor.
So now at this point when you need a beer and
yes.
some friends to talk to?
I think we can arrange that.
Yeah.
All right, and one of the key things you don't want to do with any kind of fish, shrimp included, is to overcook it. All right, so you just want the very, minimum of pinkness in the middle. So you get it marked on one side. See how easy it is to flip them over?
Absolutely.
Let's squeeze a little lemon juice over the top and give her a taste.
Chef Daniel Orr has paired this with a barley salad. Get that recipe and many more from our website, eartheats.org.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. Bloomingfoods.coop. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Carrie Boyce, executive producer.
It'll be one big grilling show next week. Pretty excited for that. And we talk to more vendors at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market. Need advice for growing tomatoes in containers? There's a vendor for that. Thanks for listening to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.